We've engaged with them significantly over the past several months to ensure that the local lending model that our community banks and our banks provide in local communities is protected. We've heard and seen different various reports in their different studies that that if this bill were enacted without closing the loophole, there could be a significant impact to lending here in Texas specifically. We're looking at around $11 billion to $21 billion in potential lost lending if this loophole were not closed.
Welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup, and today I am delighted to be joined by Chip Bartlett, who comes to us from Texas Bankers Association in Austin, Texas. Chip, welcome to the podcast. And before we jump into a very, very important and pressing subject matter, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, your career path, and how you landed at Texas Bankers Association?
Sure. Elizabeth, thank you. And it's so nice to join you all and Compliance Alliance and your all's team has such a great reputation, not only within Texas, but nationally. So just very much appreciate the opportunity to engage with you all on this. Elizabeth, I joined TBA in March. It's a long and winding road, but all within the financial services space. I had an opportunity in college to work for a de novo bank in the town, the University of Arkansas, so Fayetteville, Arkansas. To work as a teller, a couple years in college. And from there had an opportunity to go and become a examiner, for the Arkansas State Bank Department. So had the opportunity to go in and examine banks of all sizes. I think our largest institution at that point in time was around $12 billion. So, largely in, smaller community banks. Yeah. So really it was a fantastic learning experience to go in and see how different banks operate and different management models. And so it was just a really neat opportunity. So from there, went through my resume blindly at a for a job up in DC at the Treasury Department, specifically at the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, so FinCEN, and worked there for 5 to 6 years. Had an opportunity to wear a number of different hats, one of which was being the attaché in Mexico City, out of the embassy in Mexico City. So really neat opportunity to work collaboratively with other agencies within the U.S. government, but also counterparts within the Mexican government as well. So and then from there, had an opportunity to go work for Chairman French Hill on out of Arkansas Second District, working for on the Financial Services Committee. In the House. So really unique opportunity to go and work for a really leader on the committee and work and absorb as much as I can, much as I could from just a fantastic member. So went and worked on the Hill for a couple of years and then went and worked what naturally a lot of young, eager staffers do and go work downtown Washington, D.C. in the lobbying for banks of all different sizes there in Washington. Yep. So yep. And ultimately wanted to get back closer to family and had an opportunity to come work for the Texas Bankers, Bankers Association, and jumped at the opportunity to come work with Chris and Celeste and just a great team here at TBA. So here we are.
Chip, thank you for that very brief professional resume. I am so thrilled that you are part of the TBA family now. Obviously, Compliance Alliance, our relationship with TBA is very close. And when I heard that you were joining the staff there, I was just personally excited because someone with your background and vast range of experience just brings such an emphasis and deep knowledge on policy and government work. I know now what you are doing with TBA involves quite a lot of policy work and keeping your finger on emerging issues that are affecting banks. And I know today we want to talk specifically about one really hot button topic. It's become kind of this little niche topic that's really, really important for the industry. And we want to help bankers explain and explore why it's so important. And we're talking about the Clarity Act. Can you tell us a little bit, in your own words, the winding path that has taken us up to the Clarity Act? Already we have the Genius Act in place. So tell us why this matters and how we got here.
While the activity and the focus is on Washington and passing the legislation, this really impacts the local communities throughout the country, and specifically, you know, here in Texas. There's some data that shows, as it relates to the Clarity Act, that if in particular within the Clarity Act, a number of issues, but the hot pressing issue for the banking industry has to do with Section 404. It's around the yield. It's around the yield interest loophole that's commonly referred to. And this is where we are trying to close the loophole from preventing or ensuring that stablecoin issuers are not able to partner with third-party affiliates to offer interest or yield or reward-like products to entice deposits to leave traditional financial institutions and go to crypto platforms. That's really where we are today. And how did we get here? Last July, the president signed the Genius Act. The Genius Act set up the stablecoin regime for the US. What that means is it created the US stablecoin regime, which means that's backed dollar for dollar from stablecoin US dollar. And that can be integrated into payment systems, cross-border payments. I liken it to just the metaphor that I use is they built the car for the stablecoin regime, where they were setting up the process, allowing stablecoins as a crypto option to integrate into the US financial system. That during that particular debate, the banking industry was very vocal and loud regarding the preventing stablecoin issuers from offering interest or yield or reward-like products. And why is that important? Because during that conversation, the banking industry, from small community banks, credit unions, up to the largest institutions, were going and talking with members of Congress saying, we need to ensure that this loophole is closed. During that conversation, we were assured that we would come back and revisit this during the market structure bill. So we continued engaging with members of the Senate, members, particularly of the Senate Banking Committee, to ensure that that loophole was closed during the market structure conversation. So fast forward. Go ahead.
I apologize. So the market structure conversation is what the Clarity Act is now putting into place. So the Genius Act put into place what you're referring to as kind of the car, but now we're getting like the road or the rails in the Clarity Act.
Exactly. Is that correct?
I know it's a little bit complex. I want to make sure I'm following and others are following. I appreciate this so much. Please go on.
That is correct, Elizabeth. So Genius Act, they built the car. Now the Clarity Act, they're building the highway system for these cars to flourish and integrate through the U.S. financial system.
Okay.
So that is where we are today. And that is the big... that's the main attraction, if you will, as it relates to the crypto activity happening right now in Congress. So that bill was voted out of the Senate Banking Committee on a partisan vote. Bipartisan vote. Had a couple Democrats join voting that bill out of the Senate Banking Committee earlier this summer. So that means they teed that up for a future floor vote there in the Senate. So we at the banking industry have continued to engage with members, not only on the committee, but also those off committee. Here in Texas, Senator Cornyn and Cruz, we've engaged with them significantly over the past several months to ensure that the local lending model that our community banks and our banks provide in local communities is protected. We've heard and seen different various reports in their different studies that that if this bill were enacted without closing the loophole, there could be a significant impact to lending. Here in Texas specifically, we're looking at around $11 billion to $21 billion in potential lost lending if this loophole were not closed. That report was validated by a McKinsey report, McKinsey & Co. report that was released later this summer that said that that they're already seeing the activity in the migration of deposits leaving community banks and going to crypto platforms. And the study even highlighted that for every $1,000 that leaves a traditional bank and goes to a crypto platform, only 15% of that would come back. So we're talking significant amount of potential lost deposits, therefore lost lending in our local communities. Okay.
And of course, as bankers, we know this, but just to spell out the obvious, the reason why this impacts lending is when banks lose deposits, they don't have the funds to lend out. I think it is such a, it's such a simple little issue, but it has huge repercussions potentially for the banking industry. And it's breaking my heart that community banks are having to face this down. And as you are laying out, this is not an issue just affecting Texas. We deeply appreciate the advocacy TBA is doing and kind of leading the charge on some of that, but this is a national issue. Sure. I myself, I work remotely. I live in Iowa and I've been contacting my senators multiple times about this. And I am getting a response from them because I do know that senators care deeply about Main Street businesses, community banks, but they might not realize the gravity and the depth of what you're laying out here. And we know that they have to balance various industry expectations and needs. And we know there's a lot of lobbying going on right now. So the more we can advocate for ourselves and our positions, my heartbeat is for community banks. I just love them and what they do for their communities. It's what I've invested my career in. So it, even as the industry and evolves, I am just passionate about making sure that community banks can evolve with it. You know, just to clarify, I don't think anyone here is trying to say community banks don't want to get with the 21st century and don't want to embrace payment stable coins. It's just that they want a fair and equitable playing field. Do you think that's fair to say? So rather than giving this enticing option where, you know, there's yield being paid on these payment stable coins, banks just want the playing field to be fair and to have insured FDIC deposits be those deposits that can pay yield. Is that fair to say?
This is the technology of the future. If you look at ATMs in the 70s, no one thought those would be as integrated in the system as they are now. Yep. If you look at fintechs of the world and mobile banking, those trends started similar to what we have now. So I think you're exactly right that we understand, and we're not candle makers. And even most recently, TBA joined a coalition of about 40 other states. And we announced last week that we're a part of this Bank Chain Alliance, where we're ensuring that community banks are able to operate in a ubiquitous way to ensure that community banks have an opportunity, if their customers would like, to tokenize deposits or purchase stable coins for cross-border payments, domestic payments. That's something that we're very passionate about, as indicated by our announcement last week by joining the Bank Chain Alliance.
Yeah, I love that. I know that you yourself are not spearheading that project, but I'm so glad you brought that up. The Bank Chain Alliance is super exciting news to me. And the fact that we have, like you said, just around 40 state bankers associations joining together to say, look, we are going to be now operating in this area. SBA's State Bankers Associations largely do work with community banks, and they are passionate about making sure that community banks do engage in modern technologies, emerging trends to best serve customers. I mean, that, at the end of the day, it's about best serving customers and best serving the community. So as these technologies develop, something like Bank Chain Alliance is going to help banks to participate in an appropriate way. So I agree with you. I don't think that there's anything indicating that you know, community banks don't want to be involved in exciting new developments, just wanting that level playing field. My understanding is, in terms of the Clarity Act, it's a pretty small change that needs to be made. It's just very, very significant. So can you talk through specifically how to advocate for ourselves as bankers? Are we talking about contacting senators? What is the specific wording we want to be talking about? And what is the specific change that we would hope is made in the Clarity Act, verbiage of that bill?
Absolutely. So let me start with kind of the first question about banker engagement. Here at TBA, that is one of our Chairman Will Lucas out of Shelving Savings Bank in Center, Texas. That's one of his priorities this year, is getting more banker engagement. And that is absolutely critical in the work that we do here at TBA. But also, it's critical for the members of Congress to hear from their local community bankers. They are the ones that they'll see at church, at the Chamber of Commerce, at the local T-ball fields. So it's important that our members let their members of our member banks let their members of Congress know that if we don't close this loophole, it's going to have a significant impact on the local economies. So, yes, they can absolutely go to here in Texas. We've got a grassroots action center where folks, it takes 2 minutes. They can click on a link that will populate. They have to put in their name, address. It'll populate a letter. That letter, those letters will go directly to Senator Cornyn and Cruz. Elizabeth, I think to date we've had roughly 8,000 letters sent. And I'll tell you, in the conversations we've had with those offices, it's making a difference. It is absolutely making a difference. Even so much so that Senator Cornyn, not long after we, our chairman, Lucas, put out a call to action, where we had an increase in the number of letters that were sent to Senator Cornyn. We followed that up with a meeting and we hand delivered a note from our board to Senator Cornyn. After that meeting, Senator Cornyn that afternoon was publicly on the record raising concerns with this bill and particularly this provision. So that could not have been a better example of how banker engagement can make a difference and really sway a particular vote of a member of Congress. So yes, they can absolutely engage. And honestly, members of Congress don't want to hear from the suits like me. They want to hear from their constituents and in particular, the local community bankers.
And is it best, I know sometimes when like newsletters like this go out and people are like, oh, there's an email that I can just click and send, but it's not within your area. Like I said, living in Iowa, I have my own senators, my own representative. I have been contacting mine. Is it appropriate for everyone to contact their own, or is there ever a time when it's appropriate for someone to contact a different senator's office?
They can certainly contact whichever senator they would like. I would say it's certainly more impactful to reach out directly to your senator within your state, being a constituent. That's the demographic and population they want to hear from.
And honestly, what I have been doing, this is a little hack that I do. Whenever I get one of these newsletters that say, click here, for example, if you're in Texas, I click there and I just copy paste the recommended email wording. I take it over to my senators. Easy, easy. You just Google, how do I contact Senator Joni Ernst? You'll get her Senate webpage. Make sure it's a, you know, her Senate webpage. Hopefully we know our senators. If not, Google who's your state, Google how to contact them. You'll get their senate.gov webpage. And what I do then is just copy paste that verbiage and just change where it said Texas, you know, change it as much as needed to reflect that it's truly me, truly from the state of Iowa where I live and work from. So there are some hacks we can use. I know sometimes people are shy. They're like sitting there like, how do I draft this email? What am I trying to say? Find some verbiage, get over to senate.gov and contact your folks. This is really an important time from my understanding when maybe we're a little shy, maybe we've never done this before, but this is the time to take some action. Can you tell us why it's so urgent? My understanding is there is a date coming up. I think it's September 15 when it's really urgent to take action before then.
Just given the potential impact this will have on local deposits, therefore the local, our community bank's ability to lend locally. So this is absolutely critical. I oftentimes feel like a broken record saying how important this is, but it's critically, critically important. And why I so greatly appreciate you reaching out to me now is because we're looking at a September 15th cloture vote in the U.S. Senate. And what that means, this is a procedural vote. That Senator Majority Leader Thune filed cloture the night before or the morning before they left to exit for the August recess, teeing up this vote on September 15th in order to debate the time for which they would dedicate floor time on the Clarity Act. So that vote on September 15th is not for final passage. But it is a procedural vote that would trigger then the opportunity for the Senate to take that bill to the floor for final passage. And why is that so important? It's a very, very important because if that vote fails, the likelihood of this bill getting passed is incredibly, incredibly low. So that right now is our next major marker, and what we're aiming towards is that September 15th procedural vote.
So ideally for us in the industry, what we would like, unfortunately, is for this bill not to pass as it's currently written. Now, there's just that one little change we're asking for. It's not that any of us are trying to say Clarity Act is a bad thing. We do need these market structures. As you've compared it, it's kind of like the highway or the guardrails of, you know, following up on the Genius Act. Like, we do need legislation such as the Clarity Act. Just as bankers, we need it not to change our industry in such a pivotal way for some small wording in there. So in terms of the September 15 vote, if it comes to it, we would rather not have it pass as written, and we would rather just have it fail. Presumably, of course, it's going to be rewritten and would come up again later. So no one is trying to say we won't have something like the Clarity Act. We just want this version to fail because, unfortunately, it could really negatively impact our industry. Do I understand that correctly?
Exactly right, Elizabeth. Yes, okay. You said it beautifully. Okay. That is... We are certainly not advocating against the Clarity Act. We just want to ensure that banks, that we rep community banks in particular, that local lending model is protected by closing this loophole. And it is. It's a pretty easy technical fix where the Genius Act was clear that it prevented stablecoin issuers from offering interest or yield. This fix would add and their affiliates. So that would prevent that third-party loophole that we're discussing.
So it's literally just adding three words. That's all
we need. There's more to it than that, but that...
Just kind of, you know, just a small little fix, and we'll be good.
We're calling it a surgical fix, but that would certainly cover a lot of our concerns here.
Okay. It sounds laparoscopic to me. It sounds easy, in and out, and let's get it done. I do know from talking to bankers, there is a concern about this. Whenever we explain the issue, bankers do understand the concern. I also know bankers are just hesitant to contact their senators and reps. I've talked to some bankers where they're like, yeah, I was supposed to, but I kind of forgot, or I don't remember how to do that. So I guess I would continue to say the pitch is find some template email language, use Texas Bankers if necessary, and just change it according to your state. It sounds like the best option is to go ahead and contact your own senators, whatever state you live in, not necessarily trying to contact, you know, Senator Cornyn and so on in Texas. But we are talking specifically the Senate, right? So right now it's not about contacting our House of Representatives. It's about contacting our national senators. Is that correct?
Eventually, if it does pass, this will get sent back to the House for another vote, where they'll conference and they'll come together and discuss what that unified bill looks like. So that is when we'll start engaging on the House for House members. But yes, as it stands right now, it's critical to weigh in with their senators.
Super. Okay, so we have a little bit of time, but we only have a little bit of time. It's time for bankers to take action. It's time to put on our phone voices and call our senators or email them. And the encouragement that I'm hearing from you is that it is making a difference, that these campaigns are truly making a difference, and senators are hearing and listening to what community bankers are telling them. Is that a fair takeaway?
You couldn't have said it better. It is absolutely making a difference. And we, case in point, Senator Cornyn going on the record publicly raising concerns about the crypto industry's ability to lend back into local communities, particularly here in Texas. So, and that does not happen without the education from our bankers in particular. So absolutely making a difference.
Chip, I want to thank you for the advocacy you're doing. I know that you have poured your heart into this issue just in the time it's become an issue in terms of legislation. I am inspired by your advocacy. I'm encouraged when I hear this level of thoughtfulness and depth. And just as a policy nerd, I love talking about this stuff. But it really is, like you've said, a pivotal time right now for our industry. And I deeply appreciate the work you're doing. Like I said, when you work at Texas Bankers Association, it's not just Texas you're advocating for. You're advocating for the nation. And I appreciate that so much. In terms of ending out the episode, just on a little bit more of a general note, we always ask our guests to share one piece of advice they can give to bankers. So if you want to share a piece of advice right now about the Clarity Act, or if you want to share something in general, is there any final words you'd like to say?
So I would just double down on what I've been saying. And this goes forward. Once we're past this Clarity Act debate and conversation, your voice matters. And it starts with getting out to vote and pushing, not only encouraging bank leadership, but also your employees to get out and vote. That vote makes a difference. And as community bankers, we can come together and truly make a difference if we block, blocking and tackling with our, with the candidates that support traditional banking. So one, get out to vote, and two, engage your members. They want to hear directly from you all, the real world practitioners, their constituents. It is critically, critically important, not only for the Clarity Act, but also moving forward as we move forward into the next Congress. So just continue to engage. And if you have any questions, if you're from another state and you want to call me, please reach out. Happy to talk through any of this, but just encourage you all, please get out to vote and engage once they're in Congress.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Chip. So final advice from Chip Bartlett is to stay engaged, engage with your members of Congress, let your voice be heard, and continue to advocate for our industry. This has been an incredible episode. Thank you so much for educating us, advising us on why this is so important. Chip Bartlett has been with us here, joining us from Texas Bankers Association. And that has been another episode of our podcast, Banking Matters. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we hope you join us next time.